Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this podcast extra...
There's this new trend going on where when something happens, white people say, I'm just here to listen. And I'm often thinking, well, look to what? To my tears hit the floor? You know, there's not much I can say. I'm sad and tired and sick and upset.
That's Eula Scott Bino. She co-hosts the podcast Hella Black, Hella Seattle with her friends Elena Caldwell and Jasmine Jackson. This summer, Speakers Forum recorded an event called Black Lives in America, Healing and Moving Forward. It was part of a Badwill market at the Rhino Room on Capitol Hill. The Hella Black, Hella Seattle team invited a panel of four white people to discuss racism, policing, and police killings of people of color. To better understand what took place at the event, I spoke with Eula Scott Bino. In this podcast, you'll hear that interview with clips from the event. You can listen to the full panel discussion on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Thanks to Bree Ripley for our recording. Please note, this conversation includes unedited language of an adult nature.
So my name is Eula Scott Bino, and I am one of the members of Hella Black, Hella Seattle. There are two others, Jasmine Jackson and Elena Caldwell. And on the show, we really intend to bring community towards to Seattle, specifically with people of color. And how we do that is Jasmine is the maven of the show. She brings together a bunch of events for people to check out that she thinks are worthwhile. Elena reviews restaurants because everyone has a hard time figuring out what's for dinner. And I interview people of color that we think the city should know more about and that we think should be highlighted. And we've really created the show as an answer to the huge influx of folks moving to Seattle where they would ask and say, you know, what is there to do? Where can I go out? And then if you can give them only so much, and then they're pretty, they always say what we give them, the Seattle freeze, right? And there even is a black freeze, supposedly. And it's kind of our response to say, we can't be your new best friend, but we can make sure you know everything that my new best friends do know.
You and your friends planned an event at the Rhino Room on July 24th. You called it Black Lives in America, Healing and Moving Forward. What was the idea behind the event, and how did you choose the panel that you had involved?
Yeah, so the name of the event is actually put together by Osiris. Osiris is the woman who puts on the Badwill Market every month. And after the killings of Philando Castile and Alton Sterling, she reached out to us as friends and as community saying, I'm going to make the next Badwill Market have a focus on black business, and I would love for you all to participate in some facet. And the hard thing is we can't really come in and be a business necessarily, but we can bring our voices. And how I was feeling at the time was really kind of relieved that there was finally enough proof in my mind that the conversation should and could have been flipped away from black voices, especially because I think black people will say that this is not new news at all. America really kind of mistreats us. That's how they brought us over here with that in mind. And it's been really hard for America to get used to us being here and wanting to be full-blown citizens. And I think for a lot of people, that was a conversation, but seeing those videos was undeniable, right? And so my reaction to it was, well, we don't really have to do much more convincing of white people. We don't have to try to tell them that we're hurting and that we're being harmed and that we're being mistreated. They can see it. So now what we need to know, though, is we need to know what they think, what their plans are, what their next step is going to be. Because even for the most progressive of white people that I love and care for and care for me, there's still this divide often of, well, what is my role? And I think the hardest part about that is, as a black woman, I cannot give a white person their role. They have to figure that out on their own and have conversations amongst each other. And so we really wanted to bring people together and just get the conversation going. You guys talk to each other. What can you do? How can you relate? What laws can you change? What justice can you bring about?
Did you get the kind of experience that you hoped to get, or were you surprised by anything?
Yeah, I think that we were really excited by the turnout of people. It was a decent crowd. And I think that the answers that we got were really great. People, you know, really called a spade, especially with, you know, racism is racism and privilege is privilege. And I think that that was really helpful. And there was a great moment where Alyssa spoke on having, you know, salons at her house where she could bring people together to have conversation. And honestly, that's one of the things that I think we're missing the most. People often wait for a problem to have a talk, and they often wait. There's this new trend going on where when something happens, white people say, I'm just here to listen. And I'm often thinking, well, look to what? To my tears hit the floor? You know, there's not much I can say. I'm sad and tired and sick and upset. But I don't really have much more to say. So I think it was really nice to hear white people have a conversation around what they can do and what they should do. I thought it was a really nice step in the right direction.
I'd like to play one clip from the event and get your reactions to it.
What is your history with the police? How do you feel about them? Like, how do you feel safe? Do they make you feel safe, personally?
I can tell you this. I've called the police one time in my life. It's because my house got robbed. The cops showed up and started digging through my stuff, trying to pin something on me. Hate the fucking police, and I can tell you why. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. You're giving basically no rules to these people who deserve the most rules. And every single situation is relative in a cop's mind, and they always think they're doing right. And I can tell you that they're not, because it's a human being. It's fucking terrible. I hate the fucking police. And I'll say that again. I fucking hate the police.
All right. Pretty raw. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I think that he has a different relationship with the police than I do. I don't hate them. I think that they serve a role in society. I think they serve the wrong role is the problem. I think police could be more public servants and be more involved with caring for a community versus policing, if that makes sense. Because there's this weird title in them that is protect and serve, and the serve part's kind of been snipped out. And I think that the protect part is limited to white people. And I think the hard thing about Matt is, or in Matt's words, I think he's very right about his emotions of the police did not help me in that situation, the police hurt me in that situation. And that's a problem. I mean, it really is. But I think that the bigger overarching picture is that when we call on the police for help, they don't help us. I mean, they often make us feel as if we must have done something to deserve the harm that's come our way. And especially when it comes to the violence against black bodies, they often excuse it as the fact that we exist in our skin. I wouldn't say fuck the police. I know a lot of people who would. I feel bad for them because they're human. And I think that they all kind of sign up initially with some kind of serving, caring mentality in the back of their minds. But we have such a bad system of racism and systematic racism and oppression in this country that they get in line and they play a role that is really structured and meant completely to keep it just the right way it is so that white people continue to win and everyone else stays in line and doesn't get rowdy enough to change that hierarchy, you know?
And that clip definitely stood out for, you know, for obvious reasons, but it made me wonder, had you thought about having a cop involved in the event? And also, this took place shortly after the killings of the officers in Dallas, and I was wondering if that was going through your mind at all as well.
Yeah, no. So what happened in Dallas to me is an act of terrorism individual to that one person. The same way the Dylann Roof killing of the 9 people in the church was an act of terrorism by one person. Just because that person is American and they're killing American citizens does not mean that it's not terrorism on our soil. And it's ugly, right? But on the other hand, what the police do is systematic and no justice comes our way at all. And so I almost don't feel like they're the same conversation because that man who killed those police officers in Dallas is dead. He didn't receive justice or a trial. They had a conversation with him and they blew him up. Whereas the people that kill black people are paid servants. They receive their checks and they do not go to jail. And oftentimes they're in just killings. So I don't know if they're similar to me. And then as far as having a police officer on the panel, I don't want to have one officer speak for all of them, right? And I also don't want one officer to defend the entire system. The same way I don't want one white person to defend the entire system. That's why we intentionally had four people wanting to hear different voices and to get different viewpoints. And if we did this again, I would probably choose another different four white people because I want to continue to have that dialogue be extended and not one narrative. But to have one police officer on, especially at a time of such stress, I think would almost be abusive to them. You know, if I said to a police officer, hey, come in and tell me why your system is murdering my people, there wouldn't be a right answer. You know, the only right answer is it's not okay. Those people should be in jail. You know, but I don't think that that's something an officer can often say because they often stand in this weird line of I'm doing the job I signed up for. And my job is dangerous, and so people, all people react differently. But I wouldn't want to, I mean, I just don't want anyone to feel attacked in these conversations. I think that's the hardest part, you know. And I think for white people in America right now, they've heard, you hurt me. You are hurting me. I'm ready for them to say what they're going to do differently so that I, their loved one, do not continue to feel this type of pain and fear.
I have two more clips I could play. Do you have time for that?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go.
What Alyssa said, I think all white people are racist because I look at racism from a structural standpoint. I think that I was enculturated to be racist. I think what I encounter here most in Seattle and with the people that I know is this sort of I'm liberal and I think that we're all the same, and yet there's this subtle racism that comes through. And I think Matt really, it's Matt, right? I think Matt really named that when he called out the All Lives Matter movement. That's the biggest thing that I hear that I get in conversations with about why that's racist, why that's inappropriate. But that is from good, well-meaning white people who think that they're not racist, much like myself. I think we have to always keep doing our own work. It's a lifelong process.
Thoughts on what she said there?
Yeah, I think there's so much truth in it. I think the hardest thing about being in Seattle with white people and having white friends is often that they do not recognize the individual experiences that we as black people are having that coincide with their lives. And they often don't recognize the part that they can play in it. You know, when I tell people that I've had my hair pulled multiple times on Capitol Hill, I get shock and revelation of, I can't believe that. And on the other hand, it's happened to me more than once where a person walks by me and sees that I have curly hair and they just pull my hair. And they're usually young white women. And this is in a space where we don't have enough conversations about our differences, I think, because people are often afraid to recognize that there's a real discrepancy of power. And I think a lot of people think that by giving up any inkling of where they're winning and where I'm losing, it somehow makes it seem as if they're a part of it or if they support it, you know? And I don't think that that's true. Just because you see racism doesn't mean you're a racist. You're a racist because the system has set you up to win in every single way imaginable that I am not set up to win because my skin is black. You know? I don't know. That's a really hard one because racism in Seattle is such an undercutting idea. You know, people don't say it out loud, but I had this time at my job at Sunglass Hut where a woman says to me, she was robbed at work, right? And Sunglass Hut's a really interesting place because everywhere gets stolen from. And the ideal aesthetic of whoever steals from where is that what the customer looks like, right? So who steals from Victoria's Secret is young white women. Who steals from Williams-Sonoma is older white women. Who steals from, I don't know, Nike Town is probably young black men, right? So it kind of goes with who shops here first. That's the person who's going to steal these things. And Sunglass Hut's unique because everybody wears sunglasses. And they also retail really well after for drug users. So it's not uncommon at all to have heroin addicts come in and steal aggressively. And it's not uncommon at all for a college kid who just wants a pair of Ray-Bans to come and take a pair. And I had this coworker who was stolen from by a black man, maybe a couple of black people. And when she describes the story, she doesn't say they were black, which is fine, because that's a descriptor, in my opinion. Instead, she says, you know, I didn't feel safe from the minute they walked in. They looked as if they had knives. And I thought to myself, and I said to her, oh, they looked like they were from, like, Duck Dynasty. And she said, no, they were black. And I was like, yeah, okay, well, not every black person has a knife, right? So that's one of those weird moments for Seattleites where they think, I do think every black person has a knife. I don't think that I'm going to see every black person's knife, but every once in a while, I'm going to see one. But everyone probably has one. You know?
Here's the last clip.
So to sum up what you're saying besides the conversation, what's the next step? But you have to understand that people don't go home and have conversations very often. I think that that's one of the ironic things that we do as people of color, but a lot of white people kind of, they leave it to Facebook. They leave it to us. And so I think just starting the conversation is going to be amazing. Could you imagine? No, not comments on Facebook. I mean, people go home for the holidays and talk about racism. People sit there and they say, I have a friend that's dying, that I'm afraid will die, that I see on TV. And I think to myself, Eula, Jasmine, Elena could be Sandra Bland. I think those kinds of conversations are really impactful.
Yeah, I think that's probably the, I'm sorry, I'm getting teary-eyed just thinking of that. Because that's one of the hardest things I really deal with is if I know I feel loved by so many white people and they do love me and I don't doubt that in any way, shape, or form, I often wonder how do they plan to keep me safe? Because I know how I plan to keep myself safe. I don't go certain places. If my husband wants to go for a walk at night, I am freaked out because it drives me up the wall with anxiety to think that a cop could do anything they wanted to him on the street. I don't worry about thugs and gang members. I live in the Central District. It's the whitest neighborhood ever these days. But I do worry about him, and I worry about myself in those spaces. And so the big challenge for me is if white people love me and care for me, which I know they do, like Alyssa and like Jody and like Matt and Gerald, because I've met all of them individually before this panel, and I don't know Matt and Gerald half as well as I know Jody and Alyssa, and I don't know Jody and Alyssa half as well as I know, my cousin who's white, right? But these people care for me, so I wonder how are they going to start the conversation and how are they going to start to protect us? Because the way that Philando Castile's passing affected so many white people who sent their children to his school, I wonder if they had had the conversation beforehand, how do we protect him? Would he be alive today? And I mean that as simply as saying, so Philando has had 40 times where he's been pulled over and ticketed in his life. I mean, that's a true fact. We should be probably getting him to work. We should probably be the one saying, we'll carpool for you, or we'll get you a car that doesn't get the police officer's attention the same way as this really cool old school that you drive. And we'll try to make sure that your tickets are being paid off quickly. And we'll work with you to have this system not treat you the way it's been set up to treat you. Why? Because I love you and I want the best for you. And we need more guardians of our spaces because it's true. The system is set up to give you one parking ticket, one driving ticket, and then you're screwed and you can't pay that off. So the fines go up and then your fines go up and then you go to jail and you come out and you still have fines. If some white person cared for that person enough and said, oh, I have all of this wealth. I mean, I have wealth for days. My parents owned a home, and then I own a home, and I have all these things, and I have a full-time job, and I've never spent any time in prison, and my credit score is galore. I can help you. I can see it look out for you. I can do these things for you. We would probably have so many more steps forward than we have. And so having those conversations is one really big thing I'm looking forward to amongst white people, talking about what role they can play to help us keep us safe, but also what role they can play to not just be sitting in their privilege constantly.
Eula, thanks for having this conversation with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you so much for calling, and thank you so much for giving me the time and this platform to have this, you know, brought to your listeners. It really means a lot to us at Hella Black, Hella Seattle.
That's it for this podcast extra from Speakers Forum. Eula Scott Bino co-hosts the podcast Hella Black, Hella Seattle. Again, you can hear our archive of the Black Lives in America Healing and Moving Forward event on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Thanks again to Bree Ripley for our recording. Tune in again soon.